The Hospital Research Home Lottery, $2.9 million grand prize. Homelottery.com.au.
Ruin Dits for breakfast.
I've heard it on the radio.
I only have time for one breakfast show.
The Prime Minister.
So you had to open your mouth and articulate.
Malcolm Big Mal Turnbull.
Ru, I don't know what sort of mood he'll be in this morning. Tony Abbott's
always having a bad.
Oh, but Tony Abbott's being a bit of a pain in the back. Prime Minister, good morning.
Good morning to you, Dits. Please don't say Tony Abbott. It does put me in a bad mood. You know that most mornings I wake up and my waking thought is, I hope Tony's dead.
Oh, no.
And I hope he's died violently. I'd like to see him run over by the Manly Ferry as he swims across Sydney Harbour one day, just gruesomely disfigured. Big piece of him floating down past my place at Point Piper, still in his dick stickers, whilst I'm enjoying my morning smoothie of cacao, goji berry and kale.
Look, the reason we talk about this is because he's been outspoken. This week you've been trying to sort out the NEG or the National Energy Guarantee. What is that exactly?
Well, so you people in South Australia don't have to turn the lights out, the blackout state.
Right.
Well, you know, Josh Frydenberg, of course, he was torn a new one by your former Premier, Jay Weatherill. And Josh Frydenberg's the Minister for Energy. He's been spruiking this idea hard for the NEG. If people don't know Josh, he's the bloke on the news with the three bald spots staring at the camera as if it's a gun. I mean, he's got such a shocked look on his face all the time. Looks like he's unexpectedly soiled himself most of the time. I say, Josh, just relax, mate. But in short, the NEG is securing the future of Australia's energy by getting the states to agree to sharing power, coal-fired, wind-generated, solar, hydro, all into one big gritty thing. I don't care. I'm too rich for it to affect me. But I like coal, though, because if you challenge the coal industry, they will crush you like a bug. They're vengeful and rich.
Is there an emission ceiling or carbon tax in this policy, though? That's what I want to know.
Oh, for goodness sake. Mark Ricciuto, I expected better from you. Why are you saying carbon tax? It costs people their jobs. You remember Gillard? She was routed by the carbon tax. Good old Julia, the old carrot top. The Australians realised they didn't want a wranger in the top office after a while, didn't they?
Yeah, sure
no
did.
More Fanta pants for us. No more fire crotch there.
Well, what do you say about people who are concerned about the environment then, Big Mal?
I say, wash yourselves. Just go and have a good... No, the environment. That's a good one, Roo, because it's past tipping point. What I'd say to most people is just enjoy the extra sunshine now. Just party till the end. Remember, the Liberal Party, party first, Liberal second. But my advice to millennials is always the same. Buy a piece of land 15 kilometres from the coast and just let the coast come to you. You want some beachfront property? It won't take too long.
I like that idea.
It's not a bad idea. Get to some higher ground and just watch it creep up.
Eventually you'll live on the beach, exactly.
Rising sea levels, that's right. Yeah. Uluru will be a seaside resort one day. That'd be quite nice too. We'll have to climb on the rock then. Before I go, I just want to say Triple M rocks Port Adelaide's ability to keep snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
Oh, that's unfair. Very unfair.
I was told to say that by your producer. Yeah. I have no idea what it means.
Yeah. Well, very strong Labor seat down there too, on the port.
Well, then, we'll crush them. Crush them.
All right. Good on you, Big Mal.
Dits, front page of the advertiser today is about airport security and how not all baggage at the Adelaide airport is x-rayed for weapons or explosives, despite all the world we're living in at the moment. Now, I find that really, really surprising.
Now, Roo, are you talking about my suitcase that I put through and check in or what I carry on the plane?
Well, I presume it should be all of it, to be quite honest. I think everything that you carry on, whether you carry it on or whether it goes through underneath, should be... I would have thought everything is checked for anything dangerous in the world we live in today. So that's one part that I'm flabbergasted about. Part two is that they admit that they do not know all the passengers, whether they are under fake names or not, especially when booked by other people. Once again, I find that really surprising and quite concerning that we don't know who's travelling, and we don't know that everything that's been packed on a plane is actually clear and risk free, so to speak. So I don't know. I think a lot of people would be shocked by that. I think when you fly Dits, you just expect that everything's been checked, whether it's the people on there, the luggage is getting put on there, to absolutely minimise anything that could go wrong in midair.
Hypothetically, let's just talk about passengers first up before we talk luggage. I could hypothetically have a flight to Melbourne this weekend to go to the footy, and then something comes up, I can't go. I could say to you, Roo, here's a free flight there and back, because I can't go now, take my flight. You could walk in the airport and check in, couldn't you?
Well, I don't know if you can. Don't you have to check your ID and everything?
Well, with who? I often, if I have to fly to Melbourne for the day, which you and I sometimes do for work, I get there real late because I've got no hand luggage or anything. I walk straight through, print out a boarding pass. I walk through and no one's checked me.
Yeah, well, if that's the case, Dits, we've got to tighten it up on it. Let's get Professor Greg Barton on. He's a counter-terrorism expert and airport security as well. Good morning, Greg.
Hi, good morning, Rudy.
Are you aware of this? Is this something that happens in every airport about baggage not getting 100% checked?
Look, it's not every airport and not every flight. There are some flights, you'd be conscious of your flying to America, for example, where things are checked very thoroughly and they do a secondary search. But domestic flights, very typically, not all checked-in luggage is scanned. And at many airports, many international flights, not all checked-in luggage is scanned. So there are gaps there. There's also what we're not even discussing here, but we saw with the Sydney bomb plot, the fact that a lot of stuff comes to the country by air cargo, and only a fraction of that stuff is scanned. So there are big challenges. One of the bits of low-hanging fruit, though, that you identified is that we've now got really good checks on identity, biometric checks, facial recognition for people coming and leaving from Australia. But with domestic flights, we don't have that, and that is a big hole. There's no reason why a terrorist wouldn't choose a domestic flight over an international flight, if you think about it. And yet, you're quite right. You can put a boarding pass and get on, no one really knowing who you are.
Are they talking about these things, though, Greg? Do you think in the near future they're going to tighten up on those types of things?
Yeah, I think I'm sure we'll be having a conversation in probably not very long, discussing, you know, is it worth the hassle? We sort of accept a kind of creeping, incremental erosion of the ease of doing things. And we understand, of course, generally that's for good reasons. So we accept that we, you know, take our laptop out, put the bag through the carry-on luggage x-ray, and we understand why we do that. And I think in future we'll understand. This idea of identity checks for domestic passengers was raised last year. There's a bit of pushback at the time, but I think it'll come in before very long and people understand why it's the case. It takes a long time, though, to roll out these new procedures, so you can't just flick a switch and say, okay, from now on, everyone gets their identity checked, because not everyone has the right documentation, so you've got to give public time to get ID, they don't have a passport or a driver's license, and you've got to have more staff and more training and even physical facilities at an airport, so you don't delay flights too much. So you can't just flick a switch and make it happen.
Was it about cost cutting? I mean, now when you, I was at Adelaide Airport yesterday. There's a lot less staff than there were 5 years ago. We check ourselves in, we check our own bags in. That's sure. About cost cutting with staff, surely. And that's what's brought all of this about, isn't it?
Well, the reality is it was a problem before there was cost cutting. But you're quite right. I mean, companies, any business will try and minimise their costs. So the way in which you balance that out in, you know, a society like ours, you say, okay, we'll have regulations. We'll require them to do certain things because they're not necessarily going to volunteer to do that. And that's what will happen. This will be discussed. There'll be, backdoor discussions with the industry. They'll be told this is what you're going to have to wear. There'll be discussions about how pricing structure changes. It'll add incrementally to the price of travel. Not that much in reality, but it will be a factor. They'll employ new staff. They'll perhaps redesign some of the physical facilities. And, yeah, we'll go back to probably seeing more staff around, and it'll cost them a bit more, and hopefully it won't take too much more time, but that's what's going to be required.
All right, Professor Greg Barton, thanks so much for your time this morning. Roo, it doesn't fill me with a ton of confidence.
No, I'm surprised about it, to be honest. I hadn't thought about, you know, when you're printing off your boarding passes yourself and getting preparation and then just slip straight through at the airport. But yeah, if you're a criminal or a terrorist or anything like that, as long as you know someone who's clean and you can get their boarding pass, you're through. Mm. And you're done.
On the flip side, Roo, after some terrorism or terrorist situations overseas, if you were at Heathrow Airport today flying to America, I think I'm right in saying you're told to get to the airport 3 hours early because you do put everything through these massive X-ray screens, every single thing, right? So it takes a long, long time and you sort of think, God, this is inconvenient. So that's the alternative. Now, do you want to get to Adelaide Airport 3 hours before your flight to travel to Melbourne? Or?
Well, I don't want my plane to blow up, that's for sure.
No, I agree, but that's the alternative. So if that's what we want, that could be what's required.
Well, whether it is that long ditz or not, I don't know. But I don't know. I'm certainly in the, without knowing all the information, I'm certainly in the category that wants every bag checked. And if it means that you can't print your boarding pass off before you fly, then we can't do it. I think that you should have to, every person who flies should have to have their identification checked and make sure they're a fit and worthy passenger. I'm 100% in that seat.
I tend to agree there. All right, 133353. Have you had a bad experience with this? But the simple question is, do you you surprised? Do you agree with Roo that we all need to be checked and everything needs to be checked? Because I'm on your side, Roo, I think. Now, it will take a lot more time. But if you, like you say, I'd rather that than the plane blow up. So 133353, what do you think about our airport security? Give us a ring.
Plane, let's go to Seaton. G'day, Jeff.
Morning, boys. How are you?
Good, Jeff.
I'm with Roo on this. I've just come back from the state. And their security over there makes theirs look pathetic.
What happened over there?
What did you go through?
The same stuff you do through here in Adelaide, but you have to do an identity check just to get to the security section. And once you get to the security section, 90% of people have to go through the microwave scanner, the X-ray scanner.
Yep.
Have their shoes taken off. Doesn't happen here. If you haven't got any ID, and you also, if you're not on any of the flights in the area that you're going through to, you don't get through. Like a lot of people here go through to see people off or greet people. It doesn't happen in the US on the majority of their airfields.
Okay. Yep. Well, that all sounds fine, I think.
Yeah. No, I'm all for that. And I just want to point out too, Rube, I hope any of the security people at Adelaide Airport listening this morning, I hope they don't think we're having a crack at them or bagging them. I often think that when you line up and go through the X-ray security, I always think, how hard is this job? They have to sit and concentrate watching those screens all day or for their shift. I actually think it would be a hard job to do, Roo.
Yeah, I'm having a go at the process. All the rules are in place, not the individuals there.
Those people at the airport are always friendly and very cordial, and I think they do a great job. And as I said, to sit there for hours and hours and look at those screens would not be easy. So I praise them for what they do.
Yeah, and I've got to go through it tomorrow, so I don't want to get hit as I go through.
So just check Roo. Make sure you hold him up. I want him checked for all sorts of substances. In fact, a nude search would do the job. Yeah.
Let's go to Bowden. G'day, Jason.
How you going, boys?
Good, Jase.
Look, mate, I'm a musician. I've been touring around the world since I was 14 years old. I've watched the airlines change right before my eyes. And, you know, the thing I see is you can still get identification checks, and you used to, but once you get to the gate, they still don't check you again, so you can still change the boarding pass and walk on.
So you're saying if, say, friends come through with you to say see you, you can just give them the boarding pass?
Correct. They don't check your identification at the gate.
Well, that's a loophole, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. And the other thing, too, also, is the fact that, you know, you start adding more staff. So they got rid of staff, and you add more staff. That's just going to be put back onto the consumer. The cost of that, again, is going to be the flights will go up again.
Yeah, so, but what do you want, more expensive flights, or do you want a plane to blow up every now and then?
I'm not... I totally agree with you, Roo, but, you know, things are different. You know, like, we get stuck at the airports for... The rules change for different people, especially with... comes with... Nothing's consistent. That's what I find.
Yeah,
nothing is consistent.
Yeah, that's what Ditz and I were just talking about, the fact different things can happen at different domestic airports in Australia. So good call, Jase. Thank you very much. We've got an anonymous caller. Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How you going, guys?
Good, thank you. What would you like to say?
It's pretty ordinary, the security. I got back from Queensland about a week ago now.
Yep.
They don't check licences or who you are. And also, I got away with bringing some happy herbs with me.
Right. Okay. Well, that would have put a smile on your face in more ways than one. So what, you flew back with a bit of electric spinach?
Yeah, from Adelaide to Queensland, it's just too bloody expensive there.
Can't you get any here? Why do you have to bring it back from Queensland?
No, I went from here to Queensland.
Yeah.
I brought it from here to Queensland.
You took it there and back.
Right.
No, not back.
All right, you got rid of it all up there then.
So we're just keeping you talking. The drug squad are arriving any second out the front.
That's all right. I'm mobile at the moment.
All right. Well, thanks for your honesty. Anyway, Anonymous, let's go to Blackwood. G'day, Jason.
Yeah, how you going, boys?
Good, Jason.
I was just going to say, like, I've got a pocket knife on my key ring, and yep. I've flown multiple times with this thing, and I quite often just forget to take it off.
Yep.
And just in the last couple of years, I've remembered, but I just haven't bothered. And I've been to, like, through to Dubai. I was in Africa 3 times last year. No one ever picked me up on it. And 2 weeks ago, Adelaide Airport took it off me when I was going through security.
So, good old Adelaide Airport.
Well done, good old Adelaide.
Yes.
I reckon they're doing all right.
Yeah. So how many times have you flown through Adelaide Airport in the last sort of 5 years with that knife on your key ring?
That's a good point. Probably at least a dozen, I reckon. I've been through the courthouse with it as well.
So what is it, a little hidden pocket knife on your key ring?
It wasn't little. It was about a Spyderco 50mm blade.
Right.
Wow, that's... Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, that's a little bit of an issue.
I've flown plenty of times without on the key ring. But last week, or 2 weeks ago, they took it off me in Adelaide anyway.
All right.
Good stuff. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for your honesty, Jason.
Yep. Triple M. Strap an onion to your head, fill the bath with vinegar, grab the snake oil, and start howling at the moon. It's time for Ruin Dit's Wacky Remedies.
All right. He's travelling around Australia at the moment for Science Week. Let's get him on. Dr. Carl, good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Roo, Dr. Dits.
Are you finding anything exciting out there in the world of science on the road, Dr. Carl?
Mate, this is the week where too much science is barely enough.
What's the most interesting thing you've learnt so far in Science Week?
That you basically build up your store of calcium in your body by the time you're 20. And then after that, all that can happen with your store of calcium in your body is that if you're careful, it can stay the same. Mm. Or if you're not careful, it can go down.
Wow.
So you've got to get your calcium in.
What do we need calcium for in our body? What are the main positives uses with it?
It's used structurally for your bones, but it's also used as a metabolite, as a way of making chemical reactions happen from here to there. So when, for example, your muscles contract, a flood of calcium ions are released, and the result of that is the muscles contract. So it has multiple uses in the body. And you get calcium from dairy and from broadleaf green vegetables, but mainly from dairy. And your absorption changes with age. It's about 60% when you're a kid, and it drops down to about 20% when you're beginning to fill up your bank by the time you're 20 or so. And yet you have so-called nutritionists saying that, in fact, you shouldn't have dairy and that dairy products reduce your calcium. That's the same person who also said that women are totally wrong when they breastfeed with breast milk and they should use meat broth, which, if they had done so, would have killed the babies. That guy.
What would stop you from the age of 0 to 20? Obviously, if you don't drink milk, it would stop you. What would stop a normal person who does drink milk from getting, you know, up to 100% storage by the age of 20?
They're not having enough dairy in their diet. Remember,
simple as
evolution,
that. Yep.
Yeah, dairy and not enough calcium. You see, evolution doesn't have to be perfect, just good enough. If you can lurch through your early years and have babies by the time you're 15 or 20, evolution is perfectly happy and you can go ahead and die. But if you want to have a healthy body going through into your 20s, 30s, 40s, and God help me, 50s, 60s, and 70s, then you need to have built up your calcium stores. And for me, that was the big surprise.
Wow.
That you've got to have your calcium stores built up by the time you're 20, because whatever you've managed to lay down by 20, mate, that's the maximum you're ever going to have for the rest of your life. And all you can do is keep it the same or go down.
All right. Good stuff, Dr. Carl. Interesting stuff there on Science Week. I come into work on Monday morning. I'd had a pretty busy weekend. Ditz and Alice the Wag, who you've spoken to, Dr. Carl, come in, and they'd had a lazy weekend. In fact, they'd really rested up and done not a lot, not much or no alcohol, and jammy days on Saturday on watching the TV, really lazed around. And all they've done since, Dr. Carl, is whinge about how tired they are and how they don't feel like they've rested up and got the benefits of having a quiet weekend. Why is that so? Why would that happen?
Ah, okay. First question. When you, in general, during the week, when you wake up, do you wake up happy and joyful because you've had enough sleep, or are you being dragged out of the arms of sleep by that evil alarm clock?
Oh, I'm getting sort of almost dragged out by the evil alarm clock, yeah.
Okay. Now, secondly, on the weekend, do you still get woken up by the alarm clock, or do you wake up whenever you feel like and you're waking up later than normal?
No, I think you wake up automatically at 4 a.m. because you do it during the week. But then the beauty is you wake up and then about 5 seconds later you go, oh, it's Saturday. I can just roll over and stay here. And then you hopefully fall back to sleep.
Right. Okay, the natural body rhythm of a human for sleep is not 24 hours. It's 25. Okay, that's the first thing.
Explain that. I don't get it.
If you get people living in caves where they've got no sunrise, sunset, they will drop into a 25-hour sleep cycle. And if you do the mathematics of it, it turns out that to keep your sleep cycle regular, you actually need to have a slight difference between what's natural in your body and what the outside world says. That's the first thing. So your tendency is to want to sleep in more and more. The other thing is that you should, like I do, wake up every morning well-rested after going to bed nice and early, because then you're rested when you have your normal day. And on the weekend, wake up at the small time, same time, because if you stay in longer, you start going into that 25-hour cycle, and then you want to sleep a little bit longer. Your natural wake-up time shifts later and later. And so when it comes to Monday, you're two hours out of cycle.
So if you get your sleep during the week, which you're meant to, but not everyone does. So let's assume you don't quite get enough sleep during the week. Are you saying it's still not a good thing to have a bit of a sleep in and catch up?
Oh, you've got to, what you've got to do is realize that you have been bad to your body. And what you have to do is then wake up at the same time on the weekend, but go to bed earlier.
Right.
Go to bed earlier, and that way your body has still got the same wake-up time. On the other hand, we all know that work is something invented by the fascist, imperialist, oppressors of the honest working class proletariat like you and me, and really we should just sort of lie around. And they invented coffee so we could keep on working in the afternoon instead of having our normal natural sleep then as well.
All right.
Dr. Carl, as always, super informative. Thanks for that. Enjoy Science Week too on your tour around Australia. Dr. Carl and Roo, what I take out of that is I'll be coming in at 10 a.m. from now on.
Oh, no, you'll Dr. be going Carl to bed said. Earlier. The other thing I took out of it is, how do you think I'm going to go tell them on premiership teammates from 98 that Dr. Carl told me I've got to go to bed earlier? Do you reckon that's going to work on Saturday night?
Well, get to bed at 2 a.m. instead of 4 a.m. I think that's what that means.
Good stuff, Dits.
104.7 Adelaide's Triple M Roo. A couple of terrible incidents in Europe overnight. Let's go to our UK correspondent this morning, Gavin Gray. Gavin, let's start off in Westminster. What's happened? What's the aftermath?
Morning, Roo. Morning, Dits. Yes, for those who were going to bed last night might have got this before they fell asleep. At 7:30 in the morning, UK time, a man drove a silver Ford Fiesta through some cyclists who were stationary at lights, deliberately, it would appear, swerving into them, and then a couple of pedestrians on a pavement, and then into the security barriers outside the Houses of Parliament. All this happened right in the heart of London, right by Westminster Abbey, right by where the MPs debate things. Amazingly, only three people were taken to hospital. There were no fatalities, and they have all been released from hospital since. So that is quite extraordinary. So few were injured. The man is thought to be a 29-year-old suspect. It's not thought he was known to the MI5 or counterterrorism police. It's said that he was British, but originally from another country, and apparently he is refusing to answer the questions put to him by officers.
Okay.
Well, let's go to Italy, where they had a big bridge collapse there. They're talking, what, 20 or 30 people dead there, Gavin?
A minimum of 35 is the latest. I think that's likely to climb. So this was in Genoa, northern Italy, and this was a sort of flyover that spanned, yes, some water, but also some business units underneath. It was really high up in the air. And if you get a chance or you see any of the pictures or videos, it's quite extraordinary because, quite simply, halfway across, the bridge has collapsed. Now, there was very, very heavy rain, and one of the spans on which the bridge sat gave way. And then, quite simply, the bridge and the top of the arch just collapsed. Now, the span is several hundred meters, so it's a huge section of road that's gone. And quite simply, I'm afraid, cars just toppled. I think it's been a 50, 60 meters down. And so they are divers are looking in the waters. They've got people as well around the buildings beneath trying to see if there's anyone who might still be alive in the crushed cars. So I'm afraid that death toll is likely to rise over the coming hours.
Yeah, talking about 30 or 40 cars, several heavy trucks, and up to 80-metre stretch of bridges just collapsed. As a result of a storm. So not good stuff there either.
Very, very frightening. Gavin Gray, our UK correspondent, thank you so much.
Cheers, guys.
Roo and Ditz here on Triple M. Roo, fair to say that the birth of your six kids were all quite smooth, weren't they?
Yeah,
all
relatively.
All
relatively.
Went along swimmingly?
Well, we had one that was a bit quicker than what you'd like.
All right.
Only took.
But you got to the hospital, okay?
Yeah, just got to the hospital.
What happened?
40 minutes from the first pain to a baby coming out. Ooh. And that includes the trip to the hospital and all of that. And
cool and calm?
I had a supercharged Range Rover at the time, Ditz, because I was I'd nearly lost my license. I thought I'd get a four-wheel drive to slow down.
Yeah.
Ended up buying a supercharged V8. And luckily I had a supercharged V8 because I only had to go from Air Apartments on Green Hill Road to the Burnside Hospital.
Oh, it's not fun.
But I had my
Did
wife
you stop at red lights?
Going... F and drive faster. And I was flying along. She couldn't even sit on the seat because it felt like the baby was about to come out. Got to Burnside, pulled up in the doctor's park out the front, got her out. She's bent over the front of the Range Rover in extraordinary pain. Had to get a wheelchair, got in there, push, and basically out. So, yeah, that was pretty tight. But there's a video online about the home birth at the moment with the husband and wife doing it in a bath without a doctor or a nurse in sight. But happy to have the dog in the bathroom just to lend a bit of emotional support. Ditz. Gee, that's dangerous, isn't it? Yeah. Don't you think? Don't you find that odd that you'd take the risk of a complication happening, which happens very regularly, just to have a home birth?
Roo, when my first son was born, it was the biggest awakening for me. I thought a baby comes out, you give birth, it's a beautiful thing. But everything that then starts to happen around your wife, the mother, is just incredible. And things like the placenta, for example, I had no idea about.
Mm.
There'll be people listening saying, that's all second nature. But when it's your first child, it's not second nature. All of these things are foreign. And for instance, Roo, we know that going back over centuries, so many women died as a result of childbirth.
Yep.
We've now, technology and science has advanced now and we know what to do. But if you did this at home for the first time, how would you know about? Because when they get the placenta, Roo, the doctors check it over, or the midwives do, they weigh it, they make sure it's all intact. All of this is very important. That's one thing I can think of.
Yeah, it's an amazing experience. So, and driving in this morning on the overnight show with Luke Boner on Triple M, this bloke had a funny story as well.
I delivered my youngest daughter at home on the bed where she was conceived. We walked out of the car and my wife said, I can't make it. So we rushed back into the room. One scream out, popped the head. Two screams out, popped the whole body. It was like taking a chest mark on a wet day low to the ground.
I used to drop a lot of chest marks too, right?
Yeah, well, you do drop the odd chest mark, did you?
On a wet day.
If you don't bend your knees and bend your back and get down low and get both hands underneath, you can drop them. So Funny stuff there by that fella this morning. I was laughing coming into work, but it got me thinking. It would have happened because I know I was close to Sarah giving birth in our place or in the car on the way there. That bloke caught it on his own bed where it was conceived.
And Rue, we saw the vision of you your last baby when Tom was born. You were good. We crossed to Burnside Hospital.
Yeah,
and Sarah was, who's just given birth, was actually taking the video. You were asleep on the bed.
Yeah,
so she was out of the bed. Fair poor to say, girl was just given birth, and there you are snoring your head off.
Fair to say, she took far too long to get young Tom out on that occasion. And,
that was her fault. Yeah,
it was her fault. 1-3-3-5-3. Have you taken a chess mark with your own baby?
No. 7:53 it is. We're taking some calls on childbirth.
Yeah, right? Where have you had a baby? Has it come out too quick? Let's go to Semaphore. G'day, Michael.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Yeah, very good. What happened with you?
Our little fella came out really quick as well. So, like you, Rue, the wife was saying, if and drive faster all the way down Port Road through the red light. So we got there, and I parked the car and she was already upstairs. Couldn't get on the bed, so the nurse and the midwife had put some towels on the floor.
Yeah.
And they'd have been in there about 10 minutes, and then they turned around and said, oh, we're going to get some more towels, and he just come shooting out and landed on the floor.
What? He landed on the floor?
He budgie jumped out. Didn't even cut the umbilical cord. He broke it on the way through and everything.
Oh, you would have been panicking.
Came out running.
Oh, it was terrible. It was funny. Because, I mean, it wasn't funny then, because it was like, it was the midwife as the wiki, and then the nurse was the first slip.
Yep.
And they turned around, and he was down, and so for the next, I think it was, for the next hour or so, we'll be panicking about getting scanned to make sure it was okay, and it was fine.
Yeah, well, say to the wiki in the first slip, catches win matches.
Yeah, catches win matches. Thanks for your call, Michael. That was absolutely brilliant. Let's go to the callers. We've got Angie, is it? Good morning, Angie. Hello. Is it Aggie?
Hey.
Hey, how are you, mate? You're on air.
Good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good. What happened to you? So, I hope you're a bit faster with the baby than you were getting on air.
Well, it was one of those classic catches, you know. It's like she's jumped into the bathtub to ease the pain of labour a bit.
Yep.
And we're at the Lowell Mac, and he came shooting out. Like, she goes, he's coming. I'm like, I know, he's been coming the last 2 hours. And he finally shot out.
Yeah.
He's gone into the water, and he's got the cord wrapped around his neck.
Oh, no. So,
and I've tried to reach in and grab him, and I'm trying to press the button with my foot and get the nurse. Press the button. There's no nurses on the ward. So I've had to do everything myself, mate. Like,
oh, my God. You know, so caught around the neck. What'd you do? Unravel it?
Well, I had him both hands, so I'm sort of like, you know, trying to undo it, and I've just tried to bite it myself.
What?
Yeah, I tried to bite it.
A cord?
Yeah, like, get this thing around from my son's neck.
Yeah.
I've, like, just sort of lifted it towards my mouth and just gone chomp. And like,
oh, no.
My God.
I couldn't quite get through it, but I finally got it unwrapped from his neck.
Yeah.
And eventually, after like 10 minutes, the nurse had came in. I'm like, where the hell are you? Like, all this chaos was going on. It was just, you know.
And did it all work out all right in the end, or?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
eventually,
the nurse was out having a smoke.
It came good.
Okay.
I don't know where they were.
Gee whiz, that sounds a bit dramatic there. Hopefully everything's
just get
all right
now.
Get
the name of that hospital, Roo. Make sure we don't go there.
No, exactly. Let's go to Coromandel Valley. G'day, Nick.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, Nick.
Good. Yeah. No, the first one, actually, I stopped at the traffic lights down at Flinders Uni, actually, and waited for a red light while my wife was in labour the first time. But anyway, the second one, she came pretty quick. Within 20 minutes, we tried to ring, rang the midwife, said we're coming in, rang the mother-in-law to come over. And then the wife sort of said, basically, her water's broke. I threw her a towel. She goes, we're not going to make it. I threw her another towel. Went out the room, rang an ambulance, rang the midwife, two phones. She basically said, look, I'm going to have this. I jumped over, bang. Caught her.
Where? In the car.
At home. In her bedroom.
In the bedroom?
In her bedroom at home. Didn't have time for anything. So
well,
in the
it
meantime,
just comes out onto your towels in your bedroom.
Yep.
And what did you do? So you got the cord hooked up. What do you do?
No, cord was all fine. I sat the wife down, sat Layla down. They were all good. And then we just sat there until the ambulance rocked up. They walked up the stairs, kicking stones.
Yeah.
How you going, guys? I said, do you mind just cutting the cord for me? Because I thought, you know, Sim Sticks wouldn't do it, so
yeah.
They, yeah. And then we walked down the stairs and went to hospital, and all is good.
Well done. Wow, what a scary half an hour that was for you.
It was, mate. I'm very proud and honoured. Wouldn't change it for the world.
No, you wouldn't change it. It's the most best thing that can happen in your life. There's no doubt about that, Nick. Thanks for your call. Let's go to an anonymous caller for the last one.
Good. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good.
So it's not about me, it's my daughter. And they got to the hospital and she's wandering around waiting for things to happen and decided that she'd better maybe go and pee before her gets too far.
Mm.
And she's sitting on the toilet and then out pops Bobby.
Oh, no. What, into the actual toilet?
She caught him. She caught him. So he didn't actually get baptised at the same time. She caught him.
All right.
His nickname's been Pee-wee ever since.
Pee-wee.
One of the names she was thinking of calling him was Lucas.
Yeah.
So they decided not to.
Good stuff. Thank you, Anonymous. Thanks for sharing your daughter's story. Yeah. Good stuff, Dits. I like Nick from Coromandel Valley. Was pretty good.
You're going to send him off to see Super Jesus?
Yeah, we can have a choice between the footy tickets or Super Jesus. Great stuff.
Ruined Dits here on Triple M.
Big Mal up shortly.
8:25 here on Triple M.
Triple M. Roll up your chinos, put wax in your hair, smash some avocado and grab a protein shake. It's time for the Metros on Ruined Dits for Breakfast.
Righto, boys, who have we got in today?
We got Howie, 27, account manager here.
Got Josh in promotions.
Flack, operations and rush hour producer in 35.
You're the rush hour producer. So it's all your fault.
I'll tell the boys that one.
We've got Jazz coming up very shortly, in fact. Dits, so
What's your first topic, Roo?
First topic is about the fact that I don't think you blokes drink as much beer as what we used to. Whenever Dits and I'd be going out or even still do it, we'd always, nine times out of ten, you'd be having a beer or several beers beforehand, but I'm led to believe, beers on the outer and cocktails.
What's your typical shout?
Shenanigans are.
Nah, I don't know where you're getting that info from. I'm still a beer drinker. I think possibly craft beers have come in, so there's a sort of a moment for each different beer. I think after
you're a craft beer drinker, are
yeah.
You?
Well, I think, like I said, I think it's the time for each beer. I think after footy training, I'm always sort of craving a lager, just a normal lager. But then there's definitely a time for a craft beer as well.
What's your favourite craft beer?
Probably a Furphy, somewhere it's just right in between a craft and a normal lager.
What was that?
It's going to be mainstream soon. I think it's number one selling beer in a couple of states at the moment. Josh, you look like a cocktail drinker.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. No, it's a funny story though. Because I just got back from Europe and we were always like drinking beers.
But just had a month off?
Just had a month off.
Just a lazy month off, Dits.
Jeez. 1 year in, already taking a month off.
That's what these metros do. Tell me you didn't get any money off your mum and dad.
No, not like that. I can afford it myself. No, I didn't. But I am still at home, so.
You'll just be bludging off them for the next few months now, won't you?
Yeah, I'm a bit poor, but can't afford cocktails anymore then, that's for sure.
So what were you drinking overseas?
Well, it's funny that, because I was having this conversation with a few of the boys over there. So before we went out, we were drinking beers, and then one of the boys, when we got where we were going out to, he shouted us all. He was like, I got this round, and he bought us all cocktails. So
it is
coming in a bit.
Is it?
I would say so. Espresso martinis. I'm sure both of you boys have been known to have an espresso martini on a night out. But
maybe
not
late at night when you
Josh. Now, Josh, you're single, aren't you?
Yeah.
Can I just give you a hint here? When you go on a date next week, if you do ask a girl out and she says, right, what are we having? Do not order an espresso martini.
If I wanted to impress her, they are quite expensive though, aren't they, Dit?
No, just be a man and have a pint, please.
There's a tip from Uncle Dits. Flack, what do you get into?
I was brought up on VB, so I was a beer drinker for many years. These days I'm very much a wine drinker, very much a red wine. I can't, I mean, cocktails are great, but I can't justify $20 for a glass or something.
No. So you're in
Rue, can I just share a little story with you?
Oh, of course
I reckon all these shouts are out of control these days. When I was a kid, you walked into the pub and in Adelaide, every tap was a Southwick bitter. And I mean every tap. All you did was said four beers, thanks.
Yep.
So last year I was on a golf trip and, it was my shout. I'm going to the bar and one bloke goes, I'll have a 4X Gold, please. Next bloke, I'll have a Cascade Light. And the next bloke, yeah, and I'll have a Pale Ale, thanks. And then the shout went round.
Mm.
I went to the bar, I said, I'll have six 4X Gold, thanks. And I went back. I couldn't remember all that crap.
Yeah,
and I went back and handed out all the beers. And I went, yeah, that's yours, mate. That's the Cascade. And I went, yeah, and that's your, you know, light. And that's your, no one said anything. Yeah. No one knew.
And then that bloke who was meant to have the Cascade light got done for DUI.
Well, he might have. It was only a small hiccup.
Oh, God. Let's move on to our next topic. Skinny jeans, boys. Alistair Wagg sent this one up. She reckons everyone over the age of, I don't know, late 30s, all the blokes wear sort of jeans that are a bit loose fitting or a little bit baggy, and everyone below, you know, 35-ish tight jeans. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't think you have to look too far around this office to see why you should be wearing skinny jeans. There's a few shocking pair of jeans getting around.
You want to name names room as well. Or not?
But no, I was born with girls' ankles, really bad girls' ankles.
What, skinny legs?
Nah, my legs aren't too bad. It's just my like, pretty much from, you know, halfway down the calf down to my ankle, it's like...
Skinny or fat?
Skinny.
All right.
So it just looks ridiculous.
Okay. So you want to hide them as much as you can?
Need to try and, get them real skinny down there.
Josh?
Yeah, you can't be wearing those flared jeans. You need to wear, everyone's wearing skinny jeans these days, I think, and it's just a better look, I think, all around.
Mm. Josh, another tip from Uncle Ditz. You can't get them off in a hurry.
Yeah, no. I know.
It's not.
Speaking from experience here, I am.
Well, I'm just saying. It's mighty hard to get it on and off.
Yeah, get caught with your pants down once or twice. Let's go, Flack.
Skinny all the way. Skinny, if there's any part of my body that I'd be proud of, it's my legs.
Really?
I got a second opinion on that.
All that walking,
I've got great calves.
Come on.
Give
us a look at them. Come on, show us.
No, I can't because I can't get the pants up to show
them. All right, you metros. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks, boys. 104.7 Adelaide's Triple M ruined it for breakfast. Now, Roo, big game of footy coming up on the 31st of August at the Adelaide Oval.
Yeah, Friday night, the EJ Witten game is coming to town, and it's Victoria v the rest of Australia. Ooh. And one man who'll be playing for the All-Stars.
Yeah, I'm almost that I can hear.
Is the... I thought we were going to Andrew Jarman. Are we going to the zoo or something here, Ditz?
What is going on?
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we?
What are you doing there,
Jarman? What was that?
Well, I'm meditating, ruined Ditz, because obviously, you know, I'm back. I'm back in the big league for the EJ Witten game, and there's one man that I'm after. It's payback time, Tony Liberatore, Roo.
Oh, you're going to knock him out.
I'm going to put him out of his misery.
Oh, God.
Now, Jars, I've heard on the grapevine, you've been doing a lot of boxing, haven't you?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Right. Yes, sir. Well,
What's your favourite combination? What's your most deadliest combination?
Jab, jab, cross, hook, cross, swipe, duck.
How long does that take?
You'd be exhausted after that.
No, I'm loving it, Ditz. It's like you bike riding, Ditz. You used to love bike riding with your magnificent legs pounding through the hills of Adelaide. But no, I'm really enjoying it. So, look, what a great two teams, two very good football sides. I can't wait for Chad Corns and Will Minchin to line up against each other. That'll be on.
Yeah, Chad. That'll be on. He's fired up. When you're meditating, Jars, what's going through your mind? Are you picturing, you know, yourself kicking goals and long raking handballs, or what's going through your brain?
I meditate most mornings, and I've got candles. I've got my dogs around me. Roo, I'm the architect. When you're the architect and the painter, my role is to bring those very average footballers into the game.
Yep.
And that's what I'm all about. I don't worry about finishing it off. I just set it all up. As you know, I set you up when you started with the Crows and D. Jarman.
Thank you.
Look how far you boys went on. So that's my role under Malcolm Blight, the Messiah. I look forward to catching up with him too.
Okay.
The bloke that sacked you with the Crows. Anyway.
Absolutely, did. That'll go down well.
Don't get sacked again, Jars, please. I want to see you out there. Now, listen, you know, the red all-star Guernseys of the EJ Witten team, do they come in three-quarter length sleeves or not?
That's a damn good question, Ditz. I don't think I've filled out the form yet for that one. bloody hell, I'll have to get a tan. I'll have to get a spray tan done, chaps.
Now, are you having the lightning rod written across the back of you as well?
Oh, get out. Hey, you two bastards are getting yours. Don't worry. We've still got end of the year left. I reckon you two better watch your back. See you, Inkham. I haven't got over that. I've been getting whacked. I can walk down the streets of Adelaide and go, hey, Rod, lightning rod. How are you, flog?
Hey, Jazz, have you got a favourite memory against playing against Victoria? Because you're a star in the State of Origin games.
Gee, where do I start, Ruth? No, I don't know.
Was it great times, though?
They were the best games to play, and I feel for the young lads today that can't play for South Australia and Victoria. You were lucky to play in a few of the games at the end of it, but back in the days when Ditz used to call us on a Tuesday night at Football Park, the ball never hit the deck, and the speed of the ball, because you're playing with the best players in the country, geez, it was great. It was some of the best football I've ever been involved in because of the speed and the skill level.
Jars, you know, for people like me that have just been footy tragics all their lives, we didn't get to play and we used to dream about it. I just wonder if someone like you, I know this is a serious question, if you just took it for granted, you walk into a change room and you look around and there's Kernahan, McDermott, Bradley, Platten, you know, all of these great players, McGuinness, and the list goes on and on and on. I don't know, did you take it for granted? Because you were one of them, obviously, but or did you realise that you were a part of something quite special?
I think you realise you're actually part of that group, that era, Ditch. So you never take it for granted. But when you walked into the change rooms on a Sunday for, you know, a bit of a catch-up, you just knew. You just walked in and you go, wow, look at the players around here. Yeah. And they were just wonderful blokes. So you felt part of that group. And obviously when we had Young Rue and Benny Hart and McLeod, I tried to make sure they understood that as well. When they walked in for the first time, they looked around and they go, wow. Now it's serious.
All right, send us out with a bit of meditating as we leave you here, Sugar Daddy.
Marion, can you just rub my left shoulder, please? Oh, no. Take care, boys. Love you.
It's the EJ Witten game. It's on August 31st at the Adelaide Oval. He is an idiot.
He is hilarious. That's what he is. Andrew Newton-Jarman.
For the Hospital Research Home Lottery, $2.9 million grand prize, homelottery.com.au.